Let's do this.
What is virtualization?
You're gonna learn today.
Innovate like a startup, deliver like an enterprise.
I hope you're coffeeed up and ready because it's gonna be a great day.
I know you're gonna dig this.
Oh yeah.
You're listening to the Virtually Speaking Podcast with Pedro Lero and John Nicholson.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Virtually Speaking Podcast, episode number 140. My name is Pete Fletcher, a.k.a. Pedro Arrow, and joining me for the first time of 2020 is Mr. John Nicholson. John, Happy New Year, buddy.
Happy New Year to you.
How's it going, man?
It's going well. Although, you know, I had all these great resolutions. I was going to get my lab going well. I was going to fix everything on the house. And so far, I have been out of commission. I had the great salad dressing incident of 2020. I opened my fridge, a salad dressing glass bottle came out and shattered on my foot.
Oh.
And sliced it open. And I have been on the couch. But while I've been on the couch, I've been looking at some network performance tuning. I'm gonna make our clusters better. Don't worry.
So you're turning a bad accident into a positive for the entire networking world?
That's the plan. So.
I like it, man. I like it. All right. Well, the last episode of 2019, we covered the best of the Virtually Speaking Podcast, right? We covered the most downloaded episode, which was the VMware admin tools. And then we also did some fan favorites, what people wanted to hear more of. And some of the things we heard back were Fire, Flood, and Blood, which was a popular series that we started. Another one was a series called Back to Basics. This is where we just go literally back to the basics of certain core functions inside of VMware. We did one just on vCenter. We did another one on security. And so this week, we're going to do another Back to Basics episode, and this one's going to just be on networking. Now, you may remember all the way back in episode 85, we had a networking episode, I think it was called Network Troubleshooting, and that was with our global support services guy, Mr. Brock Yanda. And so we're going to bring Brock back on to talk about just back to basics networking. What do you think, John?
This sounds like a great idea.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, with no further ado, joining us for the second time on the Virtually Speaking Podcast is Mr. Brock Yanda. Brock, welcome back, man.
Hey, how's it going? Thanks for having me.
Yeah, man. Really cool. So let's see. Last time we spoke to you, you were working in GSS in escalation support, if I remember properly. Is that what you're doing still?
Same kind of. I'm now a technical lead for the networking core space here in Broomfield.
Okay. So you're still heavily involved with when somebody is using VMware and networking is not working properly and that first line level of support is trying to make it work, they usually turn to you still?
Yeah, just a few more levels up now.
Fair enough. All right. Well, yeah. So, John, what I thought we could do this episode is I've got a couple of things. One, I want to catch up with Brock. I actually ran into him at VMworld, and I want to finish that conversation with him. So we'll start with a little of that. But I also want to get into some things about vSphere networking. I think we can start with maybe you can give us a couple of tips on some of the on performance. How can we make sure that our vSphere environment, that our hosts are performing to the best of their ability? Maybe we can talk about failover, some things that we can do to make sure that failover is working properly. And maybe you can help us after that. We can sum up with maybe some troubleshooting tips and maybe you can dispel some common myths or misunderstandings about networking in the VMware space. What do you think?
Sounds good.
Sweet. So first thing I want to talk about is LACP gate. So I'll explain. I ran into Brock at VMworld and we happened to have a similar themed session. I was doing a session on vSAN best practices and the opening slide for my session was, it depends, you know, because in a lot of ways, you know, things, it really does depending on your environment, depending on your network, what your settings should be. And he said, oh, that's funny because I'm doing a session as well. And there have been some other sessions around networking and there may be some information around LACP and some people are getting the wrong idea about what we should do with LACP because like many things, it depends, right, Brock?
Yeah, absolutely. We had one, I think on John and our session was, it depends as well. There's a lot of, you know, caveats and things you need to think of before you implement that protocol. For anyone that doesn't know, LACP stands for Link Aggregation Control Protocol, which creates a LAG or a link aggregation group of two network adapters, and then based off a hashing algorithm, will move your workloads or distribute the traffic evenly. This can increase bandwidth, it can increase performance, all that kind of stuff. And then it also monitors the connections in case you have a failure of the traffic and it can fail over.
Well, that all sounds good to me. So it sounds like everybody should always have it on at all times, right?
It depends.
It's a best practice. Best practice.
Yes. So we had a lot of confusion of best practices and all that stuff. It just really depends. Link aggregation does do all of that, but it's based off your workload. In the instance of if you have a simple hashing algorithm like IP hash, which takes a source IP and a destination IP and then puts it on one link. If you have a single target, as in one VM communicating with another, that will sit on one interface and never change if that's the only workload that you have. So I get questions a lot about that. Why is my link aggregation not working? I have 4 1-gig network adapters. Why am I not getting 4 gigs? bandwidth does not equal speed.
What, 1 + 1 doesn't equal 2?
Yeah. So. I equate it to a highway. You have a car going down it 80 miles an hour. Adding another one doesn't make that car go 120. I just have 2 cars now. So based off your hashing.
I like that.
So
like
looking that. Looking at the hashing, if I'm on a standard switch, I've got kind of a limited number of options. I've got MAC hash, which is not going to be any type of LACP or lag or anything. That's just a pseudo random based on the MAC. There's virtual port ID, which is the default. That's just a pseudo random. Different VMs go down different paths, right?
Yeah, so by default, if you were to just plug in 2 network adapters and put them on a standard switch, by default, virtual port ID takes the port ID that it assigns on the virtual switch, which is like 10, then modular functions it and puts it on one of the 2 uplinks that you have. So by default, you have a virtual machine-based load balancing that's already there. By default, out of the box, you'll have half of them on one, half of them on the other. Not always half; it could be, you know, a range of differences. Sure. But that already happens out of the box. The main problem we have with standard switches is it doesn't support LACP. We get a thing called static ether channel, which most all vendors support. The problem with that is
that's the IP hash option, right?
Correct. That is the IP hash option of this teaming policy. The problem with that is it gets interchanged with LACP. It is not the same. And what you'll get is misconfigurations of that, where you'll have what I call malformed ether channel, I believe it's called, and then also layer 2 segmentation, where you'll get partitioning, like your vSAN cluster gets partitioned and can't communicate half of the nodes. It happens a lot. So that's kind of where you need to know what those settings do and what they're going to do for your workloads.
That's fair.
Well,
that's
and fair. I feel like a lot of hype gets made about I need LACP or I need lags for a quick failover. But this kind of reminds me back of spanning tree. Like back in the day, you know, if you moved a link from one part to a switch, the switches would have to think a while before it would move that MAC address in the CAM table over another port. But that's not the problem anymore, is it? Like, this isn't really, fast failover is not why we need lags.
No, absolutely. So starting with that, by default, ESXi is link aware. So if your link goes down, it will fail over automatically. That's why vMotion, you don't lose any packets if you have a correctly configured environment.
Yeah.
And we also don't participate in spanning tree. We cannot cause loops unless you configure it with, you know, port mirroring and stuff. Like, by default, it is simply load balanced. It can't cause loops, and it does do failover actually pretty fast. The only thing it can't do is packet detection, or basically LACP to use maintain packets. If those packets are lost, it will fail the connection for you. So it's link aware and uses packets to monitor the connection. By default, that monitoring doesn't happen. That's the only thing you're missing. So if you have a card that soft locks, as in it stays up, doesn't forward traffic, but doesn't go down. That's the worst failure you can have in a network adapter. And that
you'd have to have a backup NIC. Like, you'd have to be splitting your paths across NICs. And most people I see are just doing 1 NIC with 2 ports or 4 ports. And that's
correct.
At that point, the host might as well be dead and HJ is going to kick in. So we'll go into isolation response anyways.
Well, I always recommend 2 adapters in 2 different driver sets. So you have 2 different cards. That way you're not vulnerable to soft locking.
Good point. So let's actually back up on that and say, like, what do you recommend for performance for ESXi hosts? And also, if it varies depending on the size of my cluster, but what do you recommend are some of the more common things that people can do to get the best performance out of their networking in their vSphere cluster?
I think me and John really hit this on VMworld. Bigger is better. So 25 gigs is the new 10. You want to segregate your traffic, treat it like storage traffic, like you used to do back in the day. Don't, you know, if you share it, you're going to have performance issues. Invest in a nice card. Like the features and feature sets that are coming out with these new cards are performance based. Update them, get them all the way up to date with drivers and firmware, because they change things for performance. They run into issues, bugs.
I was just going to say, please know $90 special 10 gigs that were thrown in for free with the server. I mean, if you want to use it for some VM traffic, that's not doing anything fancy, but do not try to run storage on that. For the love of God, do not run VXLAN. It'll be missing the right offloads, and you'll be talking to Barack on the phone, trying to understand why you're only getting 2 gig of throughput out of a 10 gig card.
Yeah. And most of the time my response is, have you talked to your hardware vendor? Because that's a feature of the card. It's off. All of the stuff that we do is mostly offloaded to the card, and all that RSS you're talking about, VXLAN offload, it's all done on the card, even tagging for VLANs.
Now, if you look on the VCG, you can actually see that those offloads are there. So yeah, the VMware VCG, which is a VMware configuration guide, it's kind of the HCL, if you will, for Nix. They do document that. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Now on failover, what do we need to configure on the switch side to make sure that everything fails over quickly? And I know that, you know, can we talk about beacon probing versus link detection?
Okay, so that's actually an interesting point, because this actually came up most recently about someone wanting a very good link detection kind of thing. I'll start by saying your SCP comment. We do not participate in SCP. There's an article out there that says SCP, you should be port fast or edge trunk or whatever it is.
So your switch should have some type of rapid spanning tree. I mean, modern spanning tree on switches can basically fire at a sub-second interval and update a CAM table. So if you have slow spanning tree failover, something is horribly wrong in your environment, or you have switches that have time traveled from 12 years ago that need to be thrown away. So
yeah, and we do not participate. So if the switch is sending him out STP messages, and if it doesn't get it back, some switches shut that port down because it thinks it's a rogue switch. There's security settings sometimes.
The old Catalyst Expresses. Those things were terrible.
Yeah. So that point aside, beacon probing. Beacon probing is not what people think it does. What it does is it sends out broadcast traffic, right? And it's back in the time when we didn't have link detection between switches. So if you had two separate switches that were not connected to each other, what would happen is we would send out a packet to get to the other side, right? If that packet didn't arrive, beacon probing sends traffic and duplicates it out both interfaces. You can see how that might be a problem.
Yeah.
But it was back in the day when we didn't have stacked switches. So that's what that's for. And it gets a little confused. And I've had to do my own research on making sure that that's exactly what happens. And it's expected behavior. So it's not link detection like LACP. It's a more very specific use case with really old switches, which I don't know why. No environment's like that right now.
It's more of a vestigial feature, because I think in the documentation it says you need 3 NICs or more to use it, so it can have a quorum or identify. It can properly fence out, I guess, issues.
Yeah, because otherwise what will happen is if you don't have 3, you'll have 2. They'll argue and flap. So you get,
this is like having 2 NGP servers. Like you just get stuck in the middle of whatever the time drift is.
The behavior is drastic. Environmental impacting if you don't have it configured right, it can actually take your network down.
Yikes. So for people that are trying to, link-based detection is the normal failover. That's what triggers a failover event if you're not doing a lag. If people aren't looking, if they're wanting something other than the link-based detection, lag is probably your best bet at that point.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's really the only way that you can take a link down based off negotiation or packets arriving, essentially. Most of the time, that's our cases, is we don't log packets. So a large portion of our cases are customer calls in, host disconnected, VM disconnected. Something happened in the network where we can't communicate anymore, and we don't log it, and there's no monitoring configured, or you know, they don't have it, and then the link didn't go down. Right. So from our stance, everything worked fine because we just forward packets, but they had an outage. So it gets kind of hit or miss with that kind of stuff. So hopefully you have it. There's some monitoring in there.
So let's go through our failure options and keep looking at some of the other ones. The other one is we can basically route traffic based off of the load on the NICs. That's kind of an interesting one that I think is often misunderstood.
Yeah. So that one I have a very specific opinion about. So the load-based teaming is virtual port ID. That's what it is. Except that every packet, if it is utilizing 75% of the network adapter of one device, so a VM or some workload is using 75% of that device, it takes the top load and moves it over to the other side.
Hmm.
Right? What happens if you have a single VM that is using 75% of the traffic? It moves it, checks again in 5 seconds, and then moves it back. So yes, it does do load-based teaming. It's great. And it will move workloads for you to other sides. But if you have a single device, that's where it kind of just doesn't really matter. You're saturating the pipe and it's going to move it and then move it back, especially like things like vSAN, if vSAN is utilizing the full network adapter. So,
well, the other thing is I think the scan interval is like, what, 45 seconds or something?
It's something like that, yeah.
Yeah, it's not, on one hand, it's not super short, but it's also not super long. And so that, the other thing is just considerations that you to be aware of with that is, one, if you're trying to troubleshoot a performance issue and you were trying to troubleshoot like, oh, we had an incident that was 15 seconds long, you're going to have to go look in the logs and figure out which path that given workload was using. So that can make troubleshooting a little more interesting, I guess. Although if you've got NetFlow data or SFlow data, you can, you know, correlate the workload there. The other thing also is that it's not gonna solve microburst problems. If you have a performance problem that extends for 10 seconds, 45 seconds isn't, you know, or whatever the pull interval is, it's not tight enough to fix that necessarily.
You'd be better off with NIOC, right?
Yeah. And I think typically I recommend both, but I guess the reason why I understand, I was talking to the VCF team, because it's kind of the default that they recommend the VVDs and VCF, is that it gives you some level of balancing without having to have a matching switch configuration. So you don't have to go talk to your switch, networking terrorists who manage your switches and try to like align the planets and get, because a lag, again, a lot of people mistakenly believe like I can just configure a lag from my side. Oh, I added both ports. Good to go. I added a hash. Like you got to figure out, you know, we step through this, we got to figure out which hash we're going to use, make sure that hash is supported, configure that hash on the switch, configure those ports to be teamed or lagged together and bonded together. And then we need to actually go make sure this thing's working, because if it's dynamic LECP, it'll fail safe and just go back to basically virtual port ID if it doesn't work. And you might not even be aware of it. There's not like a health alarm for that. So it's a lot of work.
Yeah, it is. And that's so, and that, and the failover depends on the switch. Some handle it differently. Some just take the link down if it doesn't negotiate, but it depends. So it is difficult to configure, right? We get a large portion of people that just don't understand it. When people ask me, should I use LACP? I ask you, should you? And ask them, right? You should know your workload and stuff like that. And also you should know your teams, because the management overhead of having LACP is more. Whenever you're doing maintenance or you want to drop a NIC, you have to pull it out of the lag. You have to then move it over and then do a half and half kind of movement. It's not fun. You put lag on an ESXi host, then you put vSAN on it, and then you put vCenter, and you put vCenter on the storage of vSAN, and then put NSX on it. And then what happens if your lag shuts ports down and breaks and partitions? Like you're reinstalling. It's not fun.
No. Well, yeah, because if there's a configuration gap between there, you're right, that causes you can kind of create a chicken egg setup problem. The other thing I've just in general seen with it is that people will get the ports wrong, or it's just a lot easier to instead just say I'm gonna attach all the VLANs to the ports, which is generally pretty easy to bulk apply those, and then just plug stuff in, which is what most people would rather do.
And that's what I recommend most of the times is if, you know, depending on how many ports you have, I always recommend like 6. So you have 2 for vSAN, 2 for vMotion, 2 for workload or whatever, right?
So this guy doesn't buy NICs. This guy doesn't buy switch ports. So.
Yeah, exactly. I like spider webs, right? So we can segregate all our traffic.
I called it the Hydra server, like that 1U server that has 8 NICs coming out of it back when we used 1 gig.
Absolutely.
But that's, of course, I don't have cable management. No cable management, just cables everywhere.
But if all of those, two of them are redundant, each one has a redundancy, each one is on a different card because you can split them and kind of do like a weird spider web where half the cards are on there. It's redundant. It's load balanced. It's segregated. So nothing's going to affect anything. vMotion can't just take out your storage or cause vSAN sync problems because it's destroying your network when you're trying to vMotion, because that happens. And that's the best practice is segregate. Treat it like storage. Treat your vMotion so it doesn't, destroy your storage, all that kind of stuff. Or you have a rogue VM that just destroys your network. Like it can happen. Things update, things do weird stuff. It happens all over.
So what about port binding? I think I remember last time we spoke, I think John was having a little bit of, John, I don't know if you can pronounce it yet, but we talked a lot about different port groups. Let's see, there's different port bindings. There's static, dynamic, and what's the third one?
Ephemeral port groups.
John, how do you say it?
Ephemeral.
I'm just gonna keep making up pronunciations.
If I don't know, but ephemeral port groups. What is the recommendation or the best practice, if you will, around port binding?
So in a DBS, we switch to a database, right? That vCenter owns. Okay, that assignment that used to be on a standard switch for virtual port ID is now up to vCenter. If you're static, right? So you set it static. When you spin up a VM, it has to assign itself to a port that lives on the host, but it's in a database on the vCenter. So there was I don't know if we talked about it last time, but there's a blog post that was out there for a while where if vCenter is sitting on the port group and it's static and you lose access to vCenter, but you want to assign vCenter a port, you kind of get into catch-22. So there's a thing called an ephemeral port binding, which allows the host to do it. And then you can spin up VMs all you want, and it'll put it on a DBS because there's allocated ports. And then as long as you have the number of ports, it won't go over. You'll be fine. That is a little bit of overhead. So the recommendation is usually just leave it at default. Static is fine, except for issues when it comes to like vCenter. So what I always recommend customers to do is to have a recovery port group. Now there's a blog post out there that actually shows the behavior of the catch-22 and tells you to do this. But the recommendation is to keep at least a recovery port group in the VLAN of vCenter that has the same VLAN backing or access to the network that vCenter requires, so that if you do have a failure, you log on to the host, you just move vCenter to the ephemeral port group, everything comes up, and then you configure your vCenter.
It's a get out of jail free card. It's an in case of accident, like break glass is what I view that port group as. So
absolutely. And because the reason why we say static is because like Horizon View, if you're deploying thousands of VMs, like if it needs to be in the database, right? So that's why we do it statically. Make sure vCenter correctly assigns the port. It's verified. It's not conflicted. There was an old issue with conflict ports, so that's why they do it. And they don't want overhead on the host and the host to control it.
No, Pete, when you said port bindings, I actually was initially kind of haven't had enough caffeine today, was thinking iSCSI port bindings, which you use for your iSCSI initiators when they're all on the same VLAN and you don't have two different subnets. But
actually, a very common problem is multiple subnets bound to the software iSCSI adapter. That happens.
Yeah, do not use the binding. Do not use the binding. It'll just figure out based on the subnets which one to use. But
you should review that configuration if you don't know.
We should put a tooltip in there. This podcast is now brought to you by feature requests at VMware.
That's actually a good point. It shouldn't allow you, but it does.
Brought to you by
ephemeral port groups.
I have to go ask Cedric to go talk to Core Storage after this.
Good stuff. All right, cool. So, Brock, I know you deal with a lot of customers, and I know you get a lot of escalation issues. I'm wondering if you can help us dispel just a few, or at least one or two of the, whether it's the top things that you see people running into, or maybe some of the, or dispel some of the rumors or misunderstandings, if you will, of vSphere network configuration.
I mean, John has some questions, or the questions that he gets a lot, but I'm happy to answer. We just recently went through and did a little bit of tracking on this. Out of, after 4 weeks, we had like 600 cases. A good, about every fifth of that is host disconnects. The next one is VM disconnects. Then it's configuration and drivers and firmware. That's pretty much all of the networking cases you're going to get.
Okay.
So it's configuration issues of the DVS. Everyone configures it wrong. They don't do research when they talk about VLANs. Configuration upstream. SDP being enabled. LACP misconfigurations. Static IP hash misconfigurations. Very commonly, for some reason, if you have two ports, some people just put VLANs on one port and not the other. I don't know how this keeps happening. It's very common. So in our VMworld presentation, we're like, document everything and verify your configurations everywhere, because it's actually very, it happens a lot. And then configuration, and then the disconnects. So drivers and firmware can cause a bunch of stuff. Configurations upstream happen, things happen upstream, routing issues all the time. There's a new thing happening with multiple interfaces on a single VM because of F5 balancers and applications that are doing this. So what happens is they're bridging these connections and stuff, and they really don't follow the best practices for configuration or do routing loops or have two routes with, or two gateways in the same subnet and stuff, causing a bunch of issues.
Yeah, that could be problematic.
Just a little bit. It kind of defies the whole reason why we have routes. But yeah, that's most of what it is. It's just, you know, the configuration... you should research, you should verify, and you should keep everything up to date. It's just how it is.
I mean, it makes sense to me now, like why VMware Cloud Foundation is getting so much momentum, because it sort of takes a lot of that out of your hands. I mean, it'll give you a configuration for your environment, you know, that already has best practices incorporated. So, I mean, I don't know. It seems like seems like that's really making a lot of sense to me. What do you think, John?
I mean, I do. So,
but I like the knobs.
The knobs. Yeah, we got to tune it and turn it, right? So, like, that's what I was saying a little earlier, I think before the podcast, was you can tune everything. Like, you can tune absolutely from the very bottom of the network card all the way up to the VM and how it performs inside the guest OS, what the virtual adapter is doing, absolutely everything. Should you? You know, that's up to debate. Depending on your workload, maybe. Maybe not. Maybe the defaults are good as long as you update. That's probably what you should do. In my static lab, I have 2 1-gig interfaces on management. I put a big label on it that says, do not touch for my management. I've never changed it. The same thing with storage. Put VMKs on a standard switch and say, do not touch this. And I've never had an issue. You probably wouldn't. You could leave it running for and hit the uptime award, you know?
VMotion we can break, but storage management, let's not break those.
Yeah, VMotion, you can destroy it everywhere. I love VMotion. That's like my funnest. That's my funnest troubleshooting is VMotion.
I like it. Very cool. All right, so Brock, last time I spoke to you, we asked you a couple of some ideas on some tools that people could be using, whether it's for troubleshooting or configuring. ESXtop, I think I remember you sharing, was one of the main tools that you use. But what are some of the tools that are out there that customers should at least be aware of when it comes to maybe whether it's diagnostics or understanding their network or even troubleshooting?
So there's plenty of blogs out there for like network mapping, so you know all your IPs and stuff. There's monitoring software that does ping tests and stuff like that to basically all your devices. It'll even do like DNS stuff, constantly always pinging, stuff like that. You can know that. On ours, we don't monitor too much. I believe we have things like VRNI. So if that's actually changing quite a bit. They're actually going to have like full topology views and stuff. And that's going to be a really, really awesome product to monitor your network and virtualization. For tools that I use every day. Yeah, go ahead.
I would say VRNI, that's using... NetFlow type data and stuff like that also. So it can see down to the application, like here's specific SQL traffic and like here's where these VMs are talking, like those crazy maps you make of application meshes. So you can do micro seg, you can generate from there, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And those tools are really awesome. Our new Avi load balancing software has great monitoring, like Grafana, I think. I don't have it, but I've seen it. It's awesome. For regular tools, there's just standard network tools like ping test. We have VMK ping, just testing pings, but pings are pings. So
yeah,
they don't really tell you much. There's a firewall. It's probably going to block it. Trace route, figure out where your routes are going, and ESXtop as always, because you know exactly where that VM is pinned, where it's sending traffic. I use personally a bunch of packet cap UWs to exactly know where in our stack it's going. And that tool, I can go all the way from every single VM all the way down to the actual adapters. So that's my tools. The easier way to discuss network troubleshooting is to understand the subnets and the broadcast domains. We use a thing that we've talked about is linear troubleshooting. So no matter what, you should test between VMs, right? So if you have a VM sitting on a host in the same subnet, in the same port group, that is all virtual. If that works, VMware is fine.
Yeah.
Then move it to another host. That's going to involve your switch, layer 2, if it's the same port group. If that don't work, you got a switch VLAN problem. Then move it to a different port group in a different subnet. That involves your router. If that don't work, you got a routing problem. Simple as that.
If you do that, you'll find it. What I tend to see, and I don't know why this is like a, it must be like a human study of like why people react this way, but they have an outage. So the first instinct is not to go into the VM and do an IP config. The first instinct is to disconnect and reconnect the virtual adapter. That's, everybody does that. I don't know why. What that does is like 25 operations. It's not just one. You reset the adapter, you reset the virtual adapter, you reset the physical adapter, you re-ARP, you reestablish the TCP connection, you restart the stack. Like, and then you can actually switch adapters, like physically. You can go to a different switch.
Yeah.
So I don't know why that's the first troubleshooting tactic. But usually what we have to do is then reproduce the issue because you fixed it. So we have to now know, it's very common. I'll just say that. So we would prefer you rather do the linear troubleshooting and figure out which, where's the actual breakdown.
Sure, sure, yeah.
Rather than just start disconnecting things. So that's kind of where we live.
Just reboot the whole host, yeah.
Yeah, just reboot it. It's fine. That didn't change anything. And that must be, it's got to be a VMware issue then.
Well, it goes back to the days of troubleshooting bad fiber and you'd pull the little optic out and blow in there and people wouldn't have a virtual equivalent, I guess. Actually, I think this goes all the way back to the NES where you'd pull the card out and blow in there and then plug it back in. But
I think that's just the default reaction. I don't know why.
We all learned that troubleshooting step. So one other health check I wanted to ask some questions about, because this has confused a lot of people. Recently had someone ask me, they wanted to test and make sure VLANs were properly configured. Like you mentioned, if you vMotion a VM to a different host and that port group's there, but someone forgot to configure the VLAN on the switch, that VM goes down. And this might have led to me crashing a 911 system about 7 years ago. How do we check for that? How do we prevent that? What are these health checks, the VLAN and MTU on the VDS? What do they do?
So that is it's a proactive health feature. It's called DVS Health Check. It checks for MTU settings and VLANs. What that does is that's going to send out three different packets. One's a broadcast, one's a unicast, and then the other one's another unicast. But what that does is it sends it out per host, per port group, per uplink. So if you have four hosts times four port groups times four, it can it's a lot of packets. But that's what we use normally to just be like, quick check, are you seeing the packets that you're seeing?
That's just a normal test and it's proactive. So what you do is when you're setting up an environment, turn that on and then check and then turn it off. That's all you do, because it'll flood Mac tables. You don't really want to leave it on. But that's one of those health checks. We're trying to get more health checks in for like the CIP program, which is the Customer Experience Improvement Program.
Yep.
If you've seen it, it's actually probably one of the better things we have out now, where we have checks happening, where we can check. We're trying to get that to check network stuff too. I think it's going to be pretty awesome.
Well, no, this is kind of cool though, because somebody was actually talking about in their environment, they were being asked to manually check 200 VLANs on 90 hosts on three separate clusters. And I was like doing the math on what all that would involve to actually do that. I was like, I think you should just use the DVS health check, but let me check if that.
Yes, exactly. And you should.
Well, and I've also seen sometimes if you screw something up on a, like you make a configuration with the virtual distributed switches. If you make a configuration that's going to break your ability to manage that host, it seems to like cancel or revert the change.
Yes, it does. Any change to a DVS that results in management outage, vCenter will roll back the host will have a mechanism to roll back the change. If that ever happens, your host lost direct access to vCenter. I think there's a post on Reddit right now about that, and he had the error. That means you lost network connectivity when you
did something stupid, but the hosts in vCenter are smarter than you and they reverted. So
yeah, the main problem you have is if you do an implementation of a change, and then you do a second change where that feature can't be implemented, and then you lose management. So there's a couple of ways that you could do that. It's not fun to recover because you have to restore it to a standard switch and do the catch-22 thing that we talked about
ephemeral port. Walk it back.
Yeah, you got to walk it all back. You got to like almost restore the host sometimes. It is not pretty. You got to go to command line. That's when you call on us. It's not fun.
Fair enough. Well, in the MTU check, what that is, that's a ping with a large MTU, so like a large payload over 1500. And then you do a no fragment on that ping, right, is how you check that?
Yes, absolutely. We can do that with VMK ping, but the DVS health check does that for you. We had a weird thing come up lately where MTU matching you should definitely do in your environment. Apparently, like, it's very common for people to have 9,000 networks matched with 1,500, and then there's 1,500 inside 9,000. You should not have mismatched MTUs. You can. It's just for some reason we've it's come up lately of having that mismatch. So the recommendation is always to match.
No, that makes sense. Although it's one of those things of a lot of people just kind of go with what their switch default is. And I know Cisco often defaults to 1,500. Some others out there default to 9,000. Or, you know, when I say 9,000, it's actually 9,000 plus the frame overhead. I have seen that burn some people. Is there are different, if you put in 9,000 in your switch, depending on the switch vendor, they may actually set a slightly different MTU. They may include the overheads, they may not. And so if you have two switches that are handing off and you set the same MTU, you may actually end up dropping jumbo packets, which is fun.
Yeah, absolutely. That's actually a common issue with vMotion when you fail at 21%, because that's after the network check at 14%. And then you hit the MTU check and you'll test at 8972. Like, that's what we send out at. Mm-hmm. And then the overhead of the switch will drop it. And you go, okay, well, at 8950, it works though. So you test that and it works. But we send it 8972.
Interesting.
So it drops and then it'll all fail. So yeah, we usually what I do on my switches is if it's a localized layer two, same subnet, it's not crazy. I just max it. If it's 12,000, just 12,000, just a global allow and it'll handle it fine. I'm sure there's switch vendors that'll tell me I'm wrong and stuff, but yeah.
Nice. Well, yeah. So I know that it you know, we started out like talking about the fact that it depends with LACP, and I think we can end with that as well. I know it does depend. There are some great documents out there. We've got there's a vSphere network. There's a networking best practices KB that I'll share. There's some great content out there. There's a whole vSphere networking document that will cover all of the different things to consider for the various versions of vSphere and ESXi. And there's also, you know, and vSAN has very specific networking configurations to consider as well. And so most folks that are on vSAN hopefully are already going to Storage Hub, but there's definitely some great vSAN network design out there on Storage Hub. Is there anything else that you can think of to share with me, Brock, as far as for folks that are trying to get a good understanding of network configuration for vSphere?
So this actually came up a couple times now. We went to VMworld and we talked about HCX and talked about like the best practices and all this kind of stuff came up. To really understand the configuration, you got to understand networking. And a large portion of the people that go through training and do routing, right? But they never really talk about layer two, right? How an ARP works, how a MAC table functions, what's the packet look like? What are the protocols and the ETH type of that? So
what is this OSI model they keep talking about?
Exactly. And then understanding the full packet flow, what workloads you actually need, what the workload looks like, how much bandwidth you actually need, how much.
It sounds like we need networking people on our VMware teams. We gotta hyperconverge the team together and have people actually understand, you know, particularly a lot of the layer two voodoo.
Yeah, absolutely. And then and the book that I have referenced is the one that's a VMware admin based off of a networking engineer. So you then go and learn the configurations, what's the requirements and stuff like that. But like we said before, it depends on everything. Depends on even the cost, the management, the redundancy you need, the bandwidth you need, the workloads you have. It depends.
Sure, absolutely. It should depend. That's because that, not every that environment was, is the same.
On that book, you're talking about the networking for VMware admins.
Yeah.
Chris Wall's book. Yeah, Chris Wall's had a lot of good blog posts also talking about path failover over the years. So
yeah.
I use that for training for all my my new hires and stuff. So,
that's nice. That's a good endorsement. I like it. Cool. All right. Well, man, Brock, this is we're trying to keep this as a back to basics when it comes to networking. I know that basics is not exactly in your tool house. I understand.
Sorry.
But that's a good problem to have. But for those of you that are interested in learning more about networking, we're going to leave links to the show notes in this episode. I highly encourage that you follow Brock on Twitter, and I will leave a link to that also on the show notes of this podcast. But Brock, I want to thank you for nerding out with us on networking today. John, anything else before we let Brock go?
I think that's as much networking as I can stand for a Friday afternoon. I'm gonna have to go cool down now and, you know, get as far from the cables and the Wi-Fi as possible. I'm just going to wrap myself in tinfoil and shield myself.
Wow. Well, I will say, Brock, this is without question the best episode of 2020 so far, for sure.
Oh, yeah, of course.
We're setting the bar high. So.
Yep.
All right, well, that music tells me it's time to go, and so if you want to get in touch with us, send us an email at podcast@vmware.com. You can subscribe to us on your podcast app of choice by searching Virtually Speaking Podcast. You can catch this and all episodes at vspeakingpodcast.com. A big thanks to Brock Yanda for joining us once again and geeking out on networking. We're back next week, but until then, bye for now.
Ephemeral port groups.
Enough of this jibber jabber.